You're with SBS Radio. Find more great stories in your language at sbs.com.au.
As Australian entrepreneurs adapt their business model to a world of remote working and disruption, Barayamal is taking its business accelerator program online to continue supporting First Nations entrepreneurs. And I've got the pleasure of speaking to Dean Foley, CEO of Barayamal, to talk about all this. Welcome to NITV Radio, Dean.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's always an honor, pleasure to jump on and have a yarn.
Yeah, this is a yarn at a time when we're in a deep crisis and it's completely changed the game. Tell us how Barayamal is adapting to this game-changing crisis.
Out of necessity, I think, like everybody else. You know, we've talked about the digital capability for a while and the scalability and being able to reach more people, but just being stuck in the trenches per se and just doing the daily grind and haven't been working before the coronavirus too much on the digital capabilities, the platforms that we wanted to. So yeah, just out of necessity, because we can't go anywhere or run workshops in person. So that's where it happened. Unfortunately, it wasn't out of my brilliance or ideas or anything. It just came out of just adapting and innovating.
Yeah, you're going through a process of actually online accelerator for Indigenous businesses. How is this going to happen? Tell us a bit more.
One step at a time, But we've structured it, so we've mapped it all out just based on our previous accelerator programs. And depending on how things go the next couple of months, we're taking the workshops that we've delivered and the content and putting it online on a learning management system like EDX or something like that. Yeah. So we have the capability to deliver the accelerator program online where people can access it and learn and still progressing. So that's how we're doing it, step by step. It's a massive learning curve for me. The charity is very lean, but we've got a lot of entrepreneurs and tech people that are helping out and moving us in the right direction.
Yeah, because the principle of your business model is actually helping other businesses grow through mentoring and tutoring and all that, and teaching them how to grow and get to the next step. And this was done very successfully through your premises there back in Victoria, in Melbourne. Yeah. Now you're moving online. So you have to bring all the stakeholders online as well, the participating volunteers, tutors, mentors, and all that.
Yeah, definitely. So we're bringing it all online and that's the best business model for us. A charity, non-for-profit, it's all about reaching more people, having a bigger impact, which has been a massive learning curve. And just bring it online, it just makes sense. We don't get, millions of dollars or tens of millions of dollars out of the Indigenous Affairs massive billion-dollar budget, annual budget. We've been lucky to secure a small state government grant through Launchvic, and it's all about sustainability. So for us to be able to deliver, and a lot of the people that help us do a lot of pro bono work too, the corporates and all that kind of stuff, like Kingwood Mallesons last year, supposedly they clocked up 100,000 in pro bono law advice and support for the entrepreneurs that went through our accelerator programs. So, that's the best model for us, something that's online, scalable, reach more people, but obviously very low cost to us. Just takes time from ourselves and our partners to contribute and put together a really good, world-class program.
And as I saw in your press release, the first applicants will be able to join and get this service for free.
Yeah, so we're currently accepting applications until the next 2 weeks. It closes on the 3rd of next month. So yeah, if anybody's keen and wants to, you know, take the business or idea to the next level, then, you know, definitely join for free. One of the interesting things, and maybe a little bit controversial things in the questionnaire that we put in the application is we're asking people, you know, what's, you know, how are they kind of giving back and acting like a First Nations entrepreneur business and give back to the community and their mob. And that just came out to, I guess, some of the issues or the challenges we're seeing in the First Nations business space with these big government contracts and all that kind of stuff, which are doing good. But, yeah, we're just seeing a few entrepreneurs not really acting, if I can say the word, acting like First Nations entrepreneurs. You know, very Western, you know, just focus on the financial gains for themselves and not really giving back to the community. Like there was one case on the news, I think it was a year or two ago, where one quote-unquote Indigenous entrepreneur got $5 million out of government contracts over a few years, and he only employed one Indigenous person. And for us, that's not traditional grassroots First Nations entrepreneurship. That's more Western entrepreneurship. So we're, you know, Barry Amos here to support First Nations entrepreneurs who are acting like First Nations entrepreneurs. So, you know, we have got a, you know, potentially controversial question in the application, but, you know, it's just, you know, we want to support grassroots and traditional-based First Nations entrepreneurship, which was, you know, based on equality and, you know, giving back to the community. So that's what we're focusing on. But obviously, you know, there's heaps of other programs out there for people who are just operating from a Western entrepreneurship model.
But I think it's not that controversial. You say it's controversial, but I remember in your graduation ceremony, the principles of Baramal were outlined, and giving back to community is one of the big themes that I think everyone adhered to. So it's quite understandable that you would ask a question like that.
We're always adapting and innovating, and we've kind of scrapped the 6-7 the values per se, because each tribe, each nation, you know, they've got their different values, laws, and all that kind of stuff. But we've refocused how a First Nations business entrepreneur should, you know, operate based on the traditional model. So we've broken it down into values, operation, you know, cultural protocols, motives. And the focus, obviously, you know, traditional based First Nation entrepreneurship was long-term focus, specifically on the success of the community, where Western entrepreneurship, even though it's improving, you know, back in the day, it was very short-term focus, self-centered focus on, you know, what the entrepreneurial business can gain without necessarily giving back to the community or having that cultural or corporate social responsibility. And also with the values, you know, you look at the traditional based First Nation entrepreneurship, how it's operating before colonization. It was, you know, very cooperative, equivalent, equality, and people had very specialized roles within community, like farming, law, and that kind of stuff, where non-First Nation entrepreneurship, it's very competitive.
Yeah,
it's dog-eat-dog world out there, very opportunistic for the individual, and, you know, their values are very controlled. You know, how can I control this instead of, you know, actually cooperating and giving back to the community? So basically, yeah, very individualistic, you know.
I had the opportunity to talk to some lawyers, a friend of yours, actually, a very close friend, Matthew Karakulakis, who runs AMK Law, the first all Aboriginal legal firm in Melbourne. And he actually introduced me to the concept of black cladding. Yeah, so these companies who pretend to be Indigenous just to be able to access opportunities that are normally reserved for Indigenous businesses. So asking that question, I think, is not that controversial.
Yeah, I don't think it is, but obviously it's gonna rock the boat. In some terms, it's kind of like the Wild Wild West in the First Nations economy space, business space at the moment. You know, people are kind of doing, you know, whatever they want and not being accountable to themselves and their community. They're just there to make money and basically say, you know, from their heritage, you know, I'm a First Nations entrepreneur, but they don't do anything in their community. So, you know, are they really a First Nations entrepreneur, or are they more, you know, just a normal entrepreneur?
And,
you know, the government Indigenous procurement policy came out of the motion that First Nations or Indigenous businesses were 100 times more likely to employ Indigenous people, you know, which is based out of the First Nations entrepreneurship, you know, traditional before colonization. You know, it wasn't about me. It was about, you know, giving back to the community, making sure the community is sustainable and incorporating, you know, reciprocity. If you go out hunting, you know, you give to the tribe, feed the tribe kind of thing. Well, at the moment, some of them are operating, just basically do all the hunting and take everything for themselves. So, yeah, it's quite interesting, and I'm sure it's going to rock the boat because, you know, the people, some of the people on the top that are making heaps of money out of this Indigenous procurement policy and being a quote-unquote Indigenous entrepreneur, you know, will take offense to, you know, people rocking the boat and you know, potentially interfering with all the money they're making.
They don't give back, yeah. But I think it's quite fitting to ask that question, to include it in the questionnaire. And, well, that's my perspective. After I've learned about the concept of black cladding, which is actually even heavily criticized on websites like the IBA and other organizations looking after Indigenous business. It's infuriating people, and it's robbing opportunities to people who really deserve those opportunities.
Yeah, massively. And I don't see the problem of, you know, just going completely financial for themselves. The problem I see is when there's government contracts that are there to support First Nations people, First Nations business, but they're just kind of acting like a Western business. Like, why do they get a competitive advantage when the grassroots First Nations entrepreneurship, the people giving back to the communities, should be given a bit of preference? Because it is a social procurement, so it should, you know, it's like the Australian Charity or Non-For-Profit Commissions, right? You know, some charities that get their approval can go for certain contracts, social procurement contracts and all that kind of stuff, and commercial businesses can't, you know, compete because they're commercial.
Yeah.
So why isn't there, you know, kind of that tick of approval or whatever that says, you know, this is actually a First Nations business that operates like a traditional First Nations business, and it gives back to the community, and, you know, they get preference, where if the commercial businesses could go for the social procurement contracts and compete against the charities that are actually doing good work in the community, it doesn't really make sense.
Personally, I think it's right to open the debate and get things moving and in the right direction, because personally, I think it's not right that people take advantage of, you know, this IPP, Indigenous Procurement Policy.
Yeah.
And take advantage of opportunities like the one you're offering. You know, people give their time to build capacity within their community, and then others take advantage of those trainings that you provide. It's a lot of work and effort put in. So if they don't give back, it's just a right to question what they're doing and why they're doing that. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And it just makes sense, you know, like... Like, it's a no-brainer for me, but for whatever reason, in the First Nations business entrepreneurship space, the Indigenous affairs space, it's kind of the wild, wild west at the moment, so people just do, you know, whatever, and there's no actual accountability, which is obviously why, you know, the Close the Gap initiative, a $1 billion government initiative to help close the gap, really hasn't done much over the last 10 years. Where's the accountability?
Now, coming back to your accelerator program, now that you're going online, because when we last spoke, when you launched the previous programs, you were limited in the number of participants. Does this open the opportunity to have a wider, big number of cohorts?
Yeah, massively. It opens up the opportunities with the state. With the contract we have to run the Accelerator program in Victoria, like that's 80% of participants have to be from Victoria. But with our other programs, obviously that's open up, you know, nationwide. Anybody can apply and be involved, and we're happy to help them out, you know, where we can. The challenge is, you know, when you try and get more people involved from rural or remote areas, is the connectivity to the internet. And that kind of stuff. So that's something, you know, we don't have the capacity or the money to really assist with. But yeah, it'll be open up across Australia, and there'll be more participants applying for the different programs for sure.
Yeah. Now, if you can remind us of the date so that we can put the information out there.
So the application deadline is closing at 5 p.m. 3rd of May, and then the program dates are run for about 10 weeks from May to July. And we'll go through all the different processes on how to, you know, run a business, do a startup, focus on the lean canvas, which dives into the one-page business model, value proposition, customer segments, partners, all that kind of stuff. So over 10 weeks, you know, we'll start from where they're at now. Do like a little audit on their personal and business, and then from there work out kind of like we've got this little thing, Barry on Wall Sunline, so work out where they are now and where they need to travel to, and then give them the right support and education to take them there.
Okay. Well, Dean Foley, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today and providing us with a very, very informative ideas.
It's an exciting space to be in, and thanks for having me.
Want to hear more stories like this? Listen on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.